Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Through this podcast, I'm on a mission to transform lives through primal adventure and to spread my mission of mentorship is conservation. This podcast is powered by Washington Backcountry, a resource for all hunters, both new and old. To find out more about Washington Backcountry, go to wabackcountry.com or search for Washington Backcountry on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. The Soulful Hunter Podcast is also proudly presented by T&K Hunting Gear. If you haven't heard about T&K, then it's about time you do. I've been using T&K gear out in the field and on hunts and have fallen in love with their stuff. T&K is veteran-owned and 100% made in America using only American-made products. All their gear is covered under a lifetime warranty with no questions asked. If it breaks or fails, they will fix it or replace it for free. T&K is your resource for bino harnesses, bow slings, and a lot more amazing gear. For more information about T&K hunting gear, go to tnkhunting.com or search for them on Facebook and Instagram. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Freedom on and stay soulful. The Soulful Hunter Podcast is also proudly presented by the Crazy Elk Company. Based out of the state of Washington with products made in America, they are providing solutions with gear to problems you didn't even know you had. Their tag wallet is one of those solutions, and I had the pleasure of using it on all of my hunts this last year, and it is now a mainstay in my kill kit. The tag wallet is a water-resistant zippered pouch that comes with its own reusable zip ties to safely and securely store your notch tag for quick and easy access. For more information, go to crazyelkcompany.com and use the code SOULFUL with a capital S to save 20% at checkout. Be blessed, everyone, and as always, stay soulful. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack, and today I got a really amazing episode with somebody who I've been trying to track down for quite some time and get on this podcast. And not only that, he also beat me in the Badlands Film Festival, which I'm super bitter about because if you've been following this podcast for a long time, you know that I've been talking about manifestation and saying, I'm going to win this film festival. I got first place in the bag. Until this guy, I don't know if you've heard the name, Jason Matzinger, came to town with his project Landlocked and with his Into High Country show and all that. Well, Jason is our guest tonight on the podcast, and you're in for a real treat. It's such an honor and privilege and just my pleasure to have you on the show tonight. And thank you so much, Jason, for joining us.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate it. Yeah, the Badlands, that was a pretty awesome event. It was fun to share it with you guys and, you know, just cool event. And it was really neat to hear your story. And I'm just happy to be on here, man. Oh. Really appreciate it.
You know, I really appreciate that. I'm honored. It is so much fun to be a first timer and to be someone who hasn't been in the game that long and to be surrounded with caliber of people like yourself and the things that you have produced and hosted and been a part of. It was an honor. It was really fun. I was like, all right, you know, I'm rubbing shoulders with the big dogs.
Oh, shoot. Well, I appreciate that, man. Yeah. It's always fun to see kind of the progression of, you know, filmmakers from year to year and just see the talent that shows up and it always blows me away how good everybody is and all the stories that come through. And so, yeah, it was an honor to win and, you know, just place and be a part of it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really amazing. You know, the saying, a picture's worth a thousand words. Well, if a picture's worth a thousand words, then what is motion picture worth? Because the stories that are told behind the films are incredible. The creativity and everything. I'm really blown away every year. You know, I've been watching the Badlands Film Festival. I got into watching your show Into High Country and different YouTube videos that I've seen you on. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later here in the show. But let's dive into Project Landlocked, your winner from this year's Badlands Film Festival. So those of you who have not watched the film yet, you need to. And I'm pretty sure it's still up on BadlandsFilmFest.com. You can go there and you can watch the whole show. You can watch my winning piece and Jason's third place finish. I mean, no big deal. But but Jason, I know that you talked a little bit about it on the live streaming event, but fill the listeners in on what Project Landlocked is and then also why it's so important and the meaning behind it.
Yeah, so Project Landlocked has been a long time coming in kind of trying to put together and make sure that the timing was right for everything and all the pieces of the puzzle were going to work out. But really what it, the whole idea behind Project Landlocked was to sort of bring awareness to the amount of public land that's out there that is landlocked, you know, which to paint a picture, landlocked property is a chunk of public land that's completely surrounded by private holdings. To get there, you need permission from a private landowner. There's also checkerboard, which is a whole other thing, you know, where public land touches on the corners, but it's illegal here in Montana to cross those corners. And so that's a whole other issue. So it brings up this, you know, great amount of property across Montana and the West and just the United States in general that's inaccessible. And, you know, as you look ahead to our country and the increase in population, you know, the experts are predicting that even just in the next 10 years, we could have 30 million more people in the United States alone. And you know, you look at how crowded the forests are now and hunting opportunity and things like that. And so it's just a way to kind of open up the conversation, look at these lands that we can't get to, and, you know, kind of air out what the future of that public land looks like. We used an elk hunt where we flew in by a helicopter and landed and hunted some of that stuff that we otherwise couldn't have been able to get to. And it was a kind of a cool story because that all started where all this really started was at a Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation banquet here in town that I was at. And a friend of mine had donated some flight time and dinner for two at Big Sky as like this package. It was like 2 hours of flight time and dinner for two or something like that. And nobody was bidding on it. And you know, I have a pretty good idea what it would cost to fly in a helicopter, and it seemed pretty cheap to me. So I bid on it and ended up winning it. And so that was actually 7 years ago, and him and I got to talking, and I just asked him if I could, you know, trade it out for flight time for this project. And he was just like, man, my helicopter doesn't care what direction it goes. You have that time and I owe it to you, so let's do it. And so, you know, it all just worked out and came together. It was neat that the flight time, you know, went to conservation and to RMEF, an organization I'm a huge supporter of. And it couldn't have worked out more perfect. I mean, on the second day of the hunt, we called in a bull right into our lap, and it just went really smooth. And it's really what you saw at Badlands is kind of the tip of the iceberg as far as the entirety of this whole project and what we're wanting to achieve with it. There's going to be more of a full documentary come out that's going to be closer to like that half hour, 45 minute mark that's going to really dive into a lot more detail than the short film did in Badlands. So we're continuing to produce and I'm continuing to learn more on the topic. OnX is the kind of lead sponsor of that film. And so I have meetings with them. They worked with TRCP on this landlocked report. So just a lot of fascinating information. I could talk and talk and talk on it, but that's really the basis of where it's all kind of started and where it's going.
Knowledge is power. I always talk about knowledge is power all the time on this podcast, but specifically, there's so many things that people don't know about, such as public land being landlocked and corner hopping being illegal, which it sounds insane that you can't cross where public land touches public land, but because it's at a edge of a corner of some map or, you know, really like an imaginary line, it's illegal to step right there just because. And when I learned about that, I was like, what? This is wild. And so it's really cool that you're bringing awareness to all this. So much so, and it's really interesting that you bring up the point about public lands starting to be crowded, right? So it's this interesting dichotomy where they say hunter numbers are on the decline, but it feels like public land is starting to get more squished with more hunters and more land users. And especially this last year, when I was hunting public land, I felt like I saw more hunters out than I've ever seen ever before. And I think a lot of that is attributed to the coronavirus. However, sure. With that, people had more time, so they were picking up hobbies, hunting, fishing. They also were short on cash, so maybe they were out trying to, you know, procure their own food and their own meat. With this moving forward, with you bringing awareness to it, with Onyx and RMEF, it is really important, and I'm really excited for the future and what holds as far as all these landlocked and checkerboard pieces that potentially could be available to public access. Because isn't that really like the end goal for Project Landlocked, is to maybe bring corridors in or, I'm drawing a blank, an easement, having an easement access so that you can get to these public lands?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a number of things proposed as far as how we can solve this problem. And I'm not going to sit here and act like I have the answer or the solution, or that this film is going to tell anybody exactly what needs to happen. It's just, it's going to air out the different options, and it's going to raise awareness and get people thinking about what the future of that looks like. Because really, what those checkerboard areas were set up for along railroads, you know, don't apply in today's modern world. For the reasons they were set aside for didn't sort of come to fruition in today's modern world, and they're not serving the purpose that they should be. So, you know, yes, to answer your question, the answer is Project Landlocked, the ultimate goal of it is to help get us closer to the right answer of what we should do with this. You know, I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm complaining about the opportunities we have, because I'm not. I mean, I'm a, you know, big supporter of hunting public land. I'm a big supporter of hunting private land. I don't pick sides there. You know, I think that private land is super important for the future of wildlife conservation. I think it's one of the only places that good wildlife conservation can happen, successful wildlife conservation. So, you know, I don't want to ever create a situation that puts pressure on private landowners or make them feel like, you know, we're trying to make their lives harder. And that's part of the complication here, you know, and the hard part about all this is I respect, and everybody, in my opinion, should respect private landowner rights. And so how do we move into the future and continue to respect private landowner rights, but get closer to a place where that land that is sitting there, it can be enjoyed by more people. Right. You know, that's really the goal.
Right. It's really, so, oh, go ahead.
Oh, well, there's just, yeah, there, like I said, I don't have the answer. I don't think anybody has the answer, but it's just something that I think is important that we look at, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, I would totally agree. It's really interesting being not that far removed from taking my hunter safety class and this huge emphasis in hunter's education where they're like, hey, make sure to shut the gate behind you. And I'm like, dude, how many gates are there that like that's the biggest concern for hunters? I had no clue until you start talking about issues like this, because if it was public land users accessing public land through private land and leaving a gate open is the reason why you can no longer access public land, that's a huge issue, right? And, so we need to treat others with respect and be people of our words and hold up our end of the deal. And at the end of the day, it creates a better light, and we are currently ambassadors and advocates for hunting, because if we want it to last for generations to come, we have to treat it in a manner that's also going to last for generations to come.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah, that was really kind of the long and the short of the project. I'm excited for what's to come. I think we're going to roll out the full film this summer at Elk Camp in Park City at the Total Archery Challenge there. That's kind of the projected plan at the moment, and then roll it out through OnX platforms and stuff like that. So really excited of the next phases of that project and sort of hopefully what it does for the future of that.
That's awesome. I'm really excited for that, and I can't wait to see. Shifting out of topic a little bit, I want to talk about how you actually got into filming and producing content. Being a hunter for 6 years, I know that when I come home from my hunt and my children, they're like, hey, how was the hunt? I love to show them video of what it was like, and that is like one of the driving forces of why I'm created a YouTube channel and creating this content and starting to really, really show it. For you, what got you into it? Why are you creating these videos? Why do you have a show? All that.
I mean, very similar. It's really deep rooted, and I'll try to keep it as quick as I can. But basically, exactly what you're doing with your kids, like. My dad and his friends had an 8mm video camera when I was little, and they had reels of tape, about eight inches around reels of tape, and they were only 2 minutes long. So they could only record for 2 minutes, and then they would have to like swap out tapes, So I remember my dad had these shoe boxes full of 8mm tapes, and they're still somewhere. I need to find them, as a matter of fact. And they're, these 2 minute tapes. And I remember watching them, and they were everything from him and his buddies bow hunting caribou in Quebec, like in the heyday of the porcupine herd up there, where there was just hundreds of caribou. And they're just these little quick clips, and no sound. And we would have to project them onto our living room wall. That's how you'd watch them. It was an actual projector that you would then put the reels on, And I remember my family sitting down and watching them, no sound, and dad just kind of narrating as we watched them. And, caribou, bighorn sheep, buffalo. I'm just trying to think of some of the memories I remember. But that was around the time as well when I remember, you could first start to sort of watch the first, Gordon Eastman videos or Marty Stauffer, Wild America, was sort of becoming popular around then. And I've told the Eastmans, Ike and Guy, those guys are, have become good friends of mine. And I tell them all the time that their grandpa's, one of my idols. I watched his film, The Phantom Ram, to me is still one of the best documentary wildlife films, in my opinion, that's been done sort of in the hunting genre of film. So anyway, you know, I got into watching that stuff, and that was kind of the time that you could first own a video camera as an individual that wasn't like a Hollywood producer. And I remember my dad buying a video camera, and it was big. It was really big. And it was around the time I was probably like 8 or 9 years old, I'm guessing. And so then I started to figure out how to run that camera when him and his friends would hunt around our antelope camp or deer camp or whatever it may be. And then that sort of evolved into, I guided right out of high school, and I'd always kind of had this love for filming, but it never really took until I started guiding in high school. And that's about the time Outdoor Channel then started to really blow up. And I could, you know, you didn't have to just go down to Blockbuster Video and go to the special interest section and rent a VHS video, because that's how you used to have to obtain, I mean, you know, hunting videos. Was you'd go rent them and then have to return them. There was no Netflix or Sportsman's Channel or Outdoor or any of that. So then, anyway, about that time, hunting shows did become more popular. And I remember that's when I was guiding, and I just kept thinking, holy cow, the stuff I see every day is good, or, you know, better than what's on TV. I feel like if I just packed around a camera, I could do pretty good, you know? And so I got a camera, but then I realized I couldn't really film while I was trying to guide.
Right.
And so I kind of camera took a back burner, but then when I ended up not guiding anymore, it evolved into pursuing the passion of filming more. And it just went from there. I ended up having, you know, 60 some hunts on camera that I had documented, and kind of met the right people. And next thing I knew, I was signing a contract with Sportsman's Channel, and I was very green in editing and in any of that. I just kind of threw myself under the bus and figured it out, you know. And that was around the time that SD was switching to HD. So all of the stuff I had filmed was in SD in like a 4x3 format, but everything I was getting aired in 16x9. So then to complicate things more, I had to, you know, reformat everything and transcode it. And oh my goodness, it was a nightmare. But thankfully the good people at Sportsman's Channel were patient with me and actually helped me out a lot and figuring out how to do it. And here we are today. It's been a wild ride, but I love every minute of it, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
That's so cool. I love hearing that. I also really enjoyed your drone shot above the helicopter on Project Landlocked. Was that your idea?
Yeah.
Or was that someone else's?
I mean, collaborative. Yeah. It was actually Casey Vandergraff who filmed that shot. Well, there was a number of people there and a number of different people that filmed the drone shots, but that particular one straight above looking down right before takeoff was Casey. And
that was money.
That's a wicked shot. Yeah. It was cool. 'Cause you know, you don't know that the blades have like those lines on them until I saw the drone shot after we got back, you know, and we're all on the ground and they were showing me what they got. And I was like, yeah, I was stoked.
That is awesome. Yeah, that was, I was like, okay, that was pretty legit. I'll give you that one, Jason. That wasn't too shabby. Do you consider yourself to be an
Well, as you know, it takes a team to, you know, put all that together. So I, you know, proud of how it all worked out.
Absolutely. Do you consider yourself artistic? Is it something like, did you ever pursue arts in other areas, or do you have an eye for things, or how do you view what you create?
It's kind of funny. Yes, I am. I've always loved art and mostly drawing, painting, or sculpting. I've always actually thought what I would end up doing is becoming a wildlife artist. And so I actually took advanced placement art classes through high school because I had planned on going to college for an art degree. And out of 380 some kids here at Bozeman High School, I was voted most artistic. And my dad always joked about that, but it's always been a big part of my life is drawing. And any of my best friends know me. I mean, I still to this day love drawing and painting and just any of that kind of stuff.
Well, I gotta say, it shows in what you're creating. I'm very, very impressed. You know, I just had Donnie Vincent on our podcast not too long ago, and I would consider him an artist almost before a hunter because of the content in which he's creating.
You
also are in that category. One of the coolest things is how you present your material. And I really appreciate that because an artist brings things to life. It allows perspective to be shown in ways that you really don't see in everyday life. And it's super special. Like, for example, did you personally take the shot on Instagram that you just posted? I think it was today or yesterday, of your feet with the elk antlers on the ground.
Yeah.
Take that yourself?
I took that. Yeah.
Phenomenal picture. Phenomenal.
Oh, thank you. I like those shots like that.
Yeah. It leaves a lasting impact. And I love that you're doing that. And I just want to, obviously you're not going to stop on your own accord, but I want to encourage you, keep going because it's making a difference. So I'm proud of you.
I appreciate that. No, I really do. I've always really just loved art and admired art. You know, part of what I love about going to, you know, Sheep Foundation show in Reno or Elk Camp or Mule Deer Foundation, any of those, is walking around and looking at the art and looking at the sculptures and the attention to detail and the art, the paintings and their proportions and just all of that kind of stuff. I've always really enjoyed it. Taxidermy is the same way, you know, it's art. I really enjoy analyzing taxidermy and its realism. And so, yeah, it's always been a big part of my life.
Yeah, I totally agree on the taxidermy part. So I've never paid to have anything taxidermied before until my elk. And I shot the elk 2 years ago and I just brought it home this weekend. And I find myself just staring at it. I'm like, this is a beautiful piece of art. Like, there's a reason why,
Absolutely. You
know, everyone's husband and wife or dynamics at your home is one thing. But it's like, dude, I can find myself just leaning back and staring at this and appreciating it not only for the life of the animal, but the artistic real life creation that it looks like still. And I got to give my wife some props. She was like, I was like, oh, babe, I don't know, like $1,600, $1,800 on a shoulder mount. Like, do we want to pay that much? And she's like, well, when you're 80 years old and you're rocker recliner, do you want to stare at a skull or do you want to stare at a mount? And I was like, okay, good one. That's why you're amazing, babe. Thank you.
Yep. That's great. Yeah, good answer.
I love it. Okay, so that's actually a pretty good segue into my next thing that I wanted to talk with you about, because when I first came across you, I think probably the very first introduction to who Jason Matzinger was and is was a video that Tim Burnett, the solo hunter, did with you. He interviewed you, and you were talking about your passion for hunting and how it's kind of cost you some different things and sacrifices you've had to make along the way. And as someone who, when I was starting to get into hunting, I also was brand new, newlywed, was expecting my firstborn son. I mean, there's a lot of different things going on in this world. And yet at the same time, here hunting was like calling to me. And for those of you who listen to this podcast a lot, the message of this podcast is transforming lives through primal adventure. And I don't want hunting to ever be bigger than whatever you need to do and take care of at home. One of the things that you shared was that the time hunting has kind of taken away from your time with your children and your wife and all that. So you just released a film last year talking about how you've really started to cherish this and value it and view it in a different way. Can you talk a little bit about that and that dynamic? Because for all people who are new to hunting, whether you're a kid or you're an adult, taking care of your family life is extremely important. And I don't ever want to portray anything on anyone else. We all have to make our own decisions, but can you talk about that and how it's played a role in your life?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, when I first got the opportunity to have the TV show, I was married and we were just kind of building a home and getting going. And I had the opportunity to chase this dream. And, you know, there was a ton of support and everything in the get-go. And what I guess I didn't realize was just how much time it would take, you know, and it's honestly gotten worse since then. I hope I've gotten better on how to juggle that time. But, you know, when I first started doing this, there wasn't social media. You know, the amount of time social media gobbles up, just not even trying to have it happen, is crazy for me these days, between different accounts and trying to answer people's messages. And, you know, I just always want to give people the time they deserve when they ask a question or really trying to learn about a hunt. And so I have a hard time not answering. And it takes a lot of your time. And even before that, you know, going in reverse, in the beginning of this, it ended up being very taxing on my entire family. You know, my wife at the time, just my immediate family. You know, you're always gone, and as much as you want to be there for those precious moments for your family, like birthdays, or, you know, God forbid anything bad happens while you're gone, but it does happen from time to time. And when you're not there, it's taxing on your family. No matter how much support there is, it really puts a lot of strain on your family. And I guess I underestimated that. And maybe I didn't always treat everything the best. I was learning, you know, I was learning as I was going there. I was just trying to do the best I could, because at the time I was a full-time electrician. I was, you know, newly married. I was trying to do the TV show. We had a newborn son, and there was just all these things going on. And as much as I tried, there was just, you know, as much as I would say, well, I promise I won't be gone for this the next time. Well, you know, I would have a hunt scheduled and I would be gone and everything would be going fine. And then something, you know, maybe would happen at home that they could really use support for, or I wish I could have been there. And instead I'm on the other end of a line, you know, just apologizing. And oh, I wish I wasn't here. If I could be there, I could be. And, you know, that happens enough times and it becomes really taxing. And
yeah.
And, you know, it did ultimately end up costing me my marriage. And, you know, fast forward to where we're at now, her and I are very good friends. I mean, long term, it's, you know, we get along better now than we probably did then. So no hard feelings in the long run. It was hard, very, very hard at the time. Trying to build a TV show and the ups and downs of sponsorship, and, you know, there was no guarantee on if the show would even be on the next year, depending on how it performed and things. So there was a lot of uncertainties, and, you know, about year two or three of the show, I found myself just really questioning my decisions for what I had done. You know, I had a stable job as an electrician. Everything was fine. I was making good money. Everybody was happy. And then I started chasing hunting because it always has been. I mean, I had a conversation with a friend today that, you know, made the comment to me about, you know, hunting has always been your thing, you know, and he's one of the other few that's grown up and still here in Bozeman. And so anybody that knows me and has for a long time knows that, you know, hunting's not new for me. I was the kid that when friends would come over in fourth grade, they would be scared to stay at my house because we had so many mounts on the wall that it would scare them. It literally would scare them to the point where, like, we would have to sleep in certain rooms so my friends could start to get used to being at our house. Cause that, it's been a part of my life for a long time. So I just had the chance to chase something that I felt like was calling to me, like you just had said, like, and I was torn in two different ways. Here I had the chance to chase my dream, something that so many men and women would love to have the opportunity to do every day of their lives. Yet it was causing so much heartache on the other side. I was just very torn. And, you know, looking back on it, I've even had more of a chance to separate since what you've saw with the Prime Pro, you know, and even digest things more than that. Now I realize that, you know, I could have given up the show at that point in time, and I could have 100% tried to get my life back the way it was before it started, and it still probably wouldn't have saved the marriage. You know, there's more problems than just that. It's just that certainly doesn't help, you know, and so I don't regret anything. I wouldn't change anything for the world. It's made me stronger. It's made me who I am. But it was really tough at the time, like really tough. I remember sitting on the side of the mountain because I had my title sponsor at the time backed out at the exact same time. So like I lost my house and my wife. I was living in an apartment in downtown Bozeman. I was miserable. And I had my title sponsor back out at the exact same time. And I just remember sitting, I would go hunting because I knew that's what I loved to do and what always made me happy, but it just didn't have that fulfilling feeling. And it kind of scared me for a while because I was afraid I would never get that back. You know, I was so sidetracked. I was going through the motions, but I just wasn't getting the feelings that I felt like I should. And it scared me for a while.
Yeah.
But, you know, eventually it all came back and it all made sense. And I'm happier and she's happier and my boy is happy and life is good, you know, and it gets back to just like what I believe in. And that is that everything happens for a reason. I really do. And I don't argue it. I try to figure out the understanding in it and go from there.
Yeah,
you know?
I totally get it. And you know what? Having this conversation with you right now is putting my heart at ease. And, you know, listeners, if you've heard this podcast before, you always hear me talk about life happens for us. It doesn't happen to us. And so everything is a learning opportunity. And I told Jason before we started recording that because of his vulnerability of what he shared on the episode of was it Prime Pro? Yeah, Prime Pro with Tim Burnett. It created a lasting impact on my heart and my mind that it was always in the back of my head. Is like, okay, I'm sorry this happened to Jason, but at the same time, now he's given me a great perspective of what I'm about to dive into, and to always keep that on the forefront of my mind before things get out of hand, if they get out of hand. And so I just want to commend you and say thank you for that, because through your hardship has also allowed me to have a different mindset moving forward, which is something that is you know, people don't get feedback like that very often. And I'm sure when you were sitting on the mountainside and you're living in that apartment, and I'm sure you're just like, dude, this sucks. Why am I doing this? You're doing this because at the end of the day, you got to chase your dream, and you also are impacting my life and my marriage and my parenting with my three young boys. And I seriously thank you, Jason. I really appreciate that. And with all sincerity.
I really appreciate it. You know, it is, I don't know what to say other than it just does it. It hits home for me too, because I guess a lot of times I don't realize how, you know, who it's reaching, how it's reaching them, how it's affecting them. And so many times, I guess it's easy to focus on the negative comments that I may get, you know, which aren't a ton, but those are the ones you focus on, whether it's some random YouTube comment or something on social. So it's really, yeah, pretty awesome to hear that. And that's big. I mean, I don't know what to say other than I'm super happy that it helped you, you know, get started on the right foot and avoid some of the things I had to go through. And, you know, I'll never forget kind of what pulled my head out, so to speak, was I was talking to my sister, and my sister's always been sort of like the more, I guess, worldly, courageous one, and was the one that would go out and travel, and the one that knew a bunch of languages and went to college in San Diego and lived in Salt Lake and lived in New York City. And, you know, it's just, she's lived a different life, and she's met a lot of different people from a lot of different places. And, you know, even her degree is like international relations. And I'll never forget talking to her about, you know, what should I do moving forward? Like, should I keep doing the TV show? Or should I go back to when things just seem to be a little more normal, and be an electrician and, you know, kind of that daily grind? And I remember her on the other end of the phone just saying, like, do you realize of all the people that I've ever met in my entire life that you are the only one that gets to do what he wants, like that he loves every single day of his life? You're the only person I know that has figured out a way to do that. And that really struck home with me, because she was like, you would be a fool to give that up, you know? And that really struck home with me and kind of made me think about it in a different light. And instead of what is going or what has happened to me, it made me think about, you know, the opportunity I have, like, look at the life that I have and how lucky I am versus look at what happened to me, you know, because there was that brief time period where it was easy to feel sorry for myself, yeah. You know? And so that was kind of the first conversation that made me go like, holy crap, she's lucky. Like, I can feel sorry for myself, but I am very lucky. And at the end of the day, there's there's a lot worse things that could be going on. And, you know, like I said, you know, to fast forward to today, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, everybody's in a good place. I'm stronger because of it. And everything happens for a reason. I truly believe that.
Well, and like I said, in my Badlands film submission, is that we are not results of the circumstances in our lives. We get to create our own existence, and we get to create each moment moving forward, and you accept things the way they are. You know, there's feedback. I always learned that feedback is super important in life, and a lot of times people think feedback is either negative or positive. Feedback is neither. It's not negative or positive. It's just information. It's how we take it is then whether it's positive or negative, or it affects us in one direction or another. So the feedback in which we get allows us to then make the decision and steer our lives in the direction that we're going. And it's really interesting hearing you talk about this and share it. I'm actually wearing a shirt right now. It says Face the Storm. It has a buffalo on it. And I just met a guy recently. His name's Tim Douglas. And he was talking to me about the American buffalo and how in the state of Colorado really is like where people think buffalo, maybe Montana, Wyoming, all this, is that when the storms start building up on the mountains of the Rocky Mountains and you can see them out west and you got this ranch land with buffalo and cows and all these different things, that when the storm starts to come, the cows will turn and try to outrun the storm. But cows are slow and they just don't really keep up. But buffaloes, they turn and they face the storm. And it's better to face the storm and then they run into the storm. And before they know it, they're through the storm. And what always follows the storm is beautiful days, blue skies, rainbows, all of that. And yet the cows, why the buffalo's already through the storm, the cows are still trying to outrun it and eventually are getting caught up in all that anxiety that builds and all the stress of life. And it's a great like visual for all of us to remember that life is happening for us and we get to gain ground and we get to make decisions based off of it. And everything that we do has a ripple effect and it impacts people's lives, just like the decisions you've made in your life impacting me to here we are having this conversation. So it's truly amazing. Bring us up to speed about your film that you made last year. And I remember you specifically talking about your relationship with your son or it, son or sons. I can't remember.
Well, the one has started hunting and the other's younger, but yeah, both of them.
Yeah. And just talk about that and that growth in which you've experienced as a human, but also as a father. And also, because I like to live in a mindset of abundance. It's an and life, not an or life. It's not this or that. It's this and that. So talk about what it is your perspective now moving forward with having your children and continuing on with your career, but also your passion of hunting.
Well, yeah, like I said before, I hope that, you know, we're about to start season 12 this year of the TV show, which is hard to believe, but I hope in 12 years I've learned some time management and you know, this year has been a blessing and a curse with the COVID because it has given me that time at home with my kids that I otherwise, you know, maybe wouldn't have got, whether I be traveling to trade shows or to speaking events or banquets or just whatever, you know. It's just a lot of time on the road, even when I'm not hunting, for different things that I do, you know. And so that's been nice. And I mean, I definitely have learned to appreciate, I guess not be so uptight about feeling like I gotta be out at daylight or I cannot miss tomorrow. Even if my boy has a football game, like tomorrow's the day, you know? And where when I first started doing this, I felt like I had to keep up with somebody or I had to prove something or I had to be this person that I thought I needed to be. I don't know. It's hard to explain. I was, I guess, competing with myself in a way of just feeling like I couldn't let anybody down. I had this shot at it, you know, and going through the divorce and losing, you know, on that side of things, I was like, well, I've sacrificed it now. I can't fail. So like, I can't not have this as a career and not have, you know, the family that I started and the whole thing like on that side of things. So I just went all out. Like if I'm not with, if it's not my time with my kids, I'm working, you know, and I kind of took on that mentality, which ultimately did help. Like it, that time was not unnoticed, I guess, like it did help, but you know, now today, I guess I don't feel like it's as important to be at your honey hole every morning at daylight. Like I've realized that if it's meant to be, it'll be, and you can almost do everything wrong and that opportunity will fall into your lap, you know? Whereas sometimes you get too uptight and you get too balled up and things start going the opposite way, you know? You start getting stressed about where you got to be in life and at home and in your career, and you get stressed about, oh, but I got to be here in time, but then I got to leave there. And like, it's hard to hunt effectively when your mind is just really heavy with things, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so I've found the more you can take care of the things that are truly important before you leave, or, you know, not worry about missing that one day in September to make sure to be at, you know, a school function or a football game or whatever it may be, you know, maybe it's something for a friend and not your kids or your wife or your dad or whoever it may be that's important in your life. I've learned that you don't miss out on a whole lot to miss one hunt to make sure that person knows they're important in your life, you know, and I've tried to be better about that the older I get, more and more, you know.
I can
stop and recognize those moments.
Yeah. Stop and smell the roses. Enjoy. I wrote an article on my website about hunting is the journey. It's not the destination. And the difference between being a hiker or a backpacker and a hunter is that we are enjoying the process. And, you know, hiker is like, okay, well, there's an alpine lake and we got to get there because that's what we're going to do. And then when we're done, we come right back. But hunting is that, it is the process, man. The saying, there's only so many opening days in your life, opening hunting day, but there's only so many days and moments in which we get to enjoy other people or these other things. And I'm not putting one above the other or even saying people should do this. You get to live your life however you want.
Sure.
But a true hunter is, as they're journeying, they're also looking to the left and looking to the right and looking down and looking up and checking the wind. And it really is a metaphor for life. Like, yeah, your life is still going to happen. Your hunt is going to end up happening the way your hunt was supposed to happen. And you also get to enjoy all the beautiful wonders that life brings with it, with the relationships that we have and all that. So it's so cool. And I can sense your humility in your voice as you're talking and sharing. And it's powerful, man. This podcast episode, everyone needs to hear this because what you're sharing is true gold and coming from a place of rawness and simplicity. And I love it. I love it. It's powerful, Jason. It really is.
Well, I'm glad that it resonates with you. I mean, it's something I think about a lot, you know, whether it's the writing for a film or just how to better myself in life, you know, I'm constantly trying to evolve and be better and, you know, think about, yeah, what's going to, you know, leave a lasting memory for the people around me, but also kind of leave a legacy for the generations, you know, behind me as well. And kind of juggling that is the goal.
Yeah, totally. There, we create each moment. We create our legacy. And whether you want to be concerned with it or not be concerned with it, it's something that's naturally going to happen. And in the Mayan culture, you know, they talk about the first time you die is when you realize you're mortal. The second time you die is when you physically die. And the third time you die is when no one speaks your name ever again. And that legacy to some people is like the biggest thing and the driving force behind everything. At the same time, it can cause people to do a lot of things they regret and live in the rearview mirror. When you get to live your life the way you want to live your life and identify what you want, life just blossoms before your eyes, and you end up leaving a legacy and creating a legacy that is more impactful because you were your authentic self, and you being you created space for others to also be themselves. And I commend you, man. This is one of the coolest podcasts I've ever recorded because of how authentic you are. And I've heard people say this about you, Jason. You got people that back you up that they're like, no, Jason is a real dude. He's a real, like, he is who he is. And I pick up on that. I'm blown away right now, man. I really do. Thank you. What does the future hold?
Heck yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. What does the future hold for you? What do you plan? What are your goals? What's the next step?
Man. I mean, I don't know. I guess kind of to stem off of what we were talking about. I mean, I think it's for the next, you know, I guess 10 years, it's just to be there for my boys and be the best father I can be, because that's part of the reason that it, you know, all this has become real to me, is because my one boy is 12 years old and about to turn 13, and, you know, before long, only 5 years, and pretty soon, you know, he'll be doing other things and on trying to chase his own stuff. And 5 years, I mean, gosh, good God, that is just not long at all. And so anyway, I look at it as hunting, not that I take it for granted, but hunting's is going to be there in 5 years. And my passion for conservation will not go away in 5 years. In fact, I'm going to continue. You know, there's a lot on that end that's in the works, but if I could do something better, it would just be to make sure that the next 10 years is being the best father I can be for the boys while I have that opportunity, because that's going to go real quick. And then I'll have the rest of my life to really focus on the conservation and the films and hunting and the, you know, legacy of hunting and all of that. So not that that's going to quit in the meantime. We've got some cool projects in the works. Project Landlocked. I've got another film that I'm, have tried to start last year, but couldn't get into Canada, a film called Selective that I'm working on. That's about the history of trophy hunting, and, really excited about that film. So we've got some cool projects along that lines that are coming up, but I don't know. It's interesting because just when you think you're going to be satisfied with the completion of one stage or one project, you find yourself just wanting more. So, you know, my answer would probably be different if you were to ask me in a year, but right now that's where I'm at.
I love it. Well, I can already see into the future a little bit and say that one of your next projects is going to be the concept of you with Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and Hunting is Conservation with Johnny Mack and Washington Backcountry and the Soulful Hunter with Mentorship is Conservation. And I would love to see us marriage those two together and really, really shake up the world. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll talk about that a little later some other time.
Yeah, no. I love collaborating.
I love it. Jason, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your honesty, your authentic self. Thank you for being willing and open to talk about our real private lives on a podcast that is so public. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you more than I could ever say. And listeners, I hope you guys really enjoyed this go check out Jason's content. If you're not following Jason on social media, if you haven't seen his latest film drop on Badlands, go do all that. Jace, where's some of the stuff that they can see most up-to-date content that you're producing and putting out there?
Yeah, so, I mean, you can follow along on my adventures on Jason Matzinger Official on Instagram and Facebook. IntoHighCountry.com is the website. We have a little bit of different stuff on there, some merchandise and things. As far as the most recent episodes, we're on My Outdoor TV. You can get that app and watch the most recent episodes. But other than that, a lot of our stuff is on YouTube under my channel, Jason Matzinger. So those are the main spots.
I love it. I love it. Guys, go check it out. Jason, thank you for being here. I love it. Thanks for being a part of the Soulful Nation. Everybody, be blessed. Be of good cheer. Know that life happens for you. It doesn't happen to you. Freedom on and stay soulful.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love it if you could go ahead and give this a rating as well as subscribe. Also, you can check us out on Instagram under the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Make sure to tag us in pictures and posts and use the hashtag Soulful Hunter. To find out more about the Soulful Hunter Podcast, go to soulfulhunter.com and be sure to follow the podcast as we are going to be bringing you a lot of great information, insight, and changing lives through primal adventure. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Stay tuned and stay soulful.